Bill Monroe and those people.
Yeah, and of course we know that the hot rise splits it amongst five people, including Frank, and most of the newer bands, of course, are. But even Monroe still,
right,
just gives them a dole and hopes that they stay on long enough.
Yeah, when I was with Jimmy Martin, he paid the union scale, but actually in less, because I just took whatever he gave me, so I, you know, and never said a word. But when I joined him, I'm going to say the union scale was either $35 or $45 a day. That's in 1969.
That's not bad.
And what's that?
It's not bad, is it?
Well, if you worked every day.
Oh, I see.
You know, but if you just worked 2 days a weekend, you know, that's, you know, $90.
Oh, I see.
And actually, at the time, you know, but I never checked into it, I believe there's also a per diem for the days that you travel. So he would only pay us on the days that we actually performed. So if it was a day traveling or a day in between or anything like that, you didn't get anything. And he provided lodging. So that's what I got paid. I know Byron Berline, I think when he went work with Monroe, it was $25. It was less than what I got. So, and that's all Monroe paid. But Monroe worked a lot more. See, Jimmy didn't work that much. And the first 2 years I was, or the only 2 years I was with Jimmy Martin, both years I made just barely over $2,000. And that was
total?
A full year. Yeah, total.
So it never mattered what the job paid?
No, it was never related to what he got. Hmm. And that's just the standard way in Nashville, is you have the artist, and then there's the band, and the artist is the artist, and they make the money, and then the band is, could be anybody, you know, just bodies standing up there, in country music, more so than in bluegrass. So that was the deal with that. And I think I don't know how Jim and Jesse do it. Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, I think just Lester Flatt, but I think Lester Flatt, you know, certainly did much better, and he paid his band some weekly salary, which I don't know what it was, you know.
It varies also with what you can negotiate. Tater Tate, when it came in 1980 with Monroe, he says, "I'll work for you so much."
Yeah.
And Kenny Baker did the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
It is a negotiable figure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It wasn't with me, you know, because I had no power. And if it wasn't me, he would have just gotten somebody else. You know, there were enough players around that wanted to do it at the time. And I assume there still are, because he still has a band. So, you know, I didn't have that much to offer him in terms of anything.
What did Byron do for the music?
Well, it's basically, I think it was that Monroe put some sort of stamp of approval on the Texas fiddle, you know, breakdown playing, and that was through Byron. You know, maybe Byron was the first that sort of captured Monroe's attention and was young enough and wanted to do it, you know, and could do it. You know, he could play bluegrass and then turn around and do Sally Gooden at a tempo that was more in line with what the bluegrass people like. And basically, I think he brought that to bluegrass. And I do know, just the first year I went to a bluegrass festival was 1967, and it was Bill Monroe's Bean Blossom Festival. And at that was the first time I ever saw Bluegrass Unlimited, and it was a mimeograph, legal size page stapled at the corner. And in there was a review of a record which I had and admired greatly. Was called Texas Fiddle Favorites, on the county label. And it was, you know, Vernon Solomon and Major Franklin and Louis Franklin and I can't remember who else, but you know, a real representative of the best of the Texas players at that time. And the review was of, you know, if there were 5 stars, it got 2 or 3 stars and said it was good fiddling, but of limited interest to a bluegrass fan. So there was, you know, which sort of surprised me, because I just assumed it was fiddling, you know, and there was fiddling in bluegrass, and this was fiddling, and, that, you know, it would be, they would have points of interest. But this guy that reviewed it, and I could only assume was some common opinion held by bluegrassers at that time. Of course, it was all the Eastern, because Bluegrass Limited was just in the East. There was very, very little, any writers farther west than Ohio, you know. And the guy just said of limited interest or little or interest, you know, it was good fiddling, but if you're interested in bluegrass, there's not much here for you. Where Byron, through Monroe put sort of a stamp of approval on Byron's playing of it anyway. And I don't think Monroe necessarily likes Texas-style fiddling, but he liked what Byron did. So, and I think a lot of it had to do with just Byron's attitude and how well he played it, and then that he could play it fast and up the tempo. And basically that's what he did. He sort of brought attention to that. And I think it's sort of created a more of an opening for, I'll say, Mark O'Connor and Sam Bush, although they didn't come in and play just Texas-style fiddle tunes, but they were certainly influenced heavily by those players. And I think a lot of them, like Sam, may never have been aware. Well, that's not true, actually, but it sort of brought that Texas, the idea of Texas fiddling might be something that a bluegrass fiddler might be interested in. And I guess basically that's what he did, besides being just real good. And a lot of the bluegrass, or a lot of the Texas fiddlers at the time, I remember, you know, didn't particularly like bluegrass. You know, they thought it was too fast, and they were just this hokey Eastern fiddle players going dum da da dum da da dum all the time, and they just didn't see a great virtuosity in bluegrass fiddling. And not, and it's interesting. Sort of the reverse is the first bluegrass fiddler that really made inroads into the Texas players, where the Texas players said, yeah, he's good, is Kenny Baker. Because Kenny Baker would go to these festivals, and, you know, Vernon Solomon or Norman Solomon would show up, and they'd go off and play. And they'd say, well, you know, they might not have liked or felt like the Texas players was a better approach to playing the breakdowns, but they really liked Kenny Baker's fiddling. You know, and he's sort of the first one that they took, gave any credence to at all, that I'm aware of. They like Benny Martin, some tunes Benny Martin played, but, you know, as in terms of a bluegrass fiddler, they weren't really aware of what Benny Martin was, but Kenny Baker they were. And Kenny recorded a lot of records, and the Texas players could get a hold of them and listen to them. And they played, you know, I can't think of one right off, but I'm sure some of the waltzes that Kenny Baker played, I think the Texas players play now. So he's influenced them in turn.
Have you heard his flat picking with Josh?
Yeah, I've got that. Well, not his flat picking. I've got a record. This Kenny playing guitar and Josh playing dobro.
Yes. The Prestige, the something recordings. There's 2 albums. Prestige, it starts with a P.
It may be Pilgrim.
Pilgrim. The Pilgrim Sessions.
Right. I used to have it. Seems like he also played fingerstyle guitar on him. I'm not sure.
I don't know. But that was his main instrument for years.
Yeah.
Until the USO. That story's in there, too.
He's a real interesting, it's an interesting story.
Well, Kenny, I'm going to see him next week.
Oh, are you?
He and Josh. I'm going to California along with Jimmy Martin. I'm going to play back this stuff to Jimmy Martin. He said, look what Alan Money said about
you. I've got nothing but admiration for his music. His personal thing is a different deal. But Kenny Baker really helped me a lot when I was in Nashville. playing with Jimmy Martin.
Yeah, you made a comment about it's two hard years up there.
Hauling, grinding.
They were rewarding, of course.
They were real good for me in terms of playing.
And humility?
My psyche is scarred. But my playing got better.